everybody. This is John from Papa Pump Panzai of Bad Guy Muay Thai with my main man, John DeMatt Mads.
How's it going, guys? Glad to have you here today.
So today we got Mike Mahler, who, if you know him, is one of the leading experts in kettlebell exercise and training, as well as hormone optimization. We had a great podcast for today where he really gave us a lot of input and a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, we are super excited to have him. He was a wealth of information. Awesome dude. I think you'll get a lot from this episode as far as nutrition, hormone optimization, and he definitely likes to party a little bit while he's out there in Las Vegas. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in, and there's plenty more to come.
All right, guys.
Me, Joffrey, and I have my friend John here, and he's going to be my quote-unquote co-host. How are you doing today?
Very good. How are you guys today?
Excellent, excellent. You know, I definitely don't want to take up too much of your time, and I really appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure's all ours, and just wanted to go in because we have, like, a lot of fighters who know of you, so we thought it would be really cool if we could start off with just, like, a brief introduction of yourself. You could tell us about your background, how you got into kettlebells, and basically also your research into hormone optimization.
Yeah, sure. I got started in kettlebells back in 2002 teaching. I'd been training with them for about a year. And kettlebells was basically my gateway into the fitness business. It was something I always wanted to get into, but I didn't really see a clear path to a unique selling point. So it just never seemed like something that would be viable. So I was stuck kind of in the sales world, doing business development, stuff that was paying the bills and reasonably lucrative, but it just wasn't fulfilling at all. It wasn't exciting at all. You didn't go home feeling like you did any worthy accomplishment. So I wanted to get into the fitness industry. I just didn't have a clear path. And when I started training with kettlebells, I realized that this is the perfect home-based fitness system. It kind of embodies a lot of the benefits of Olympic lifting without the technical difficulties. And it really embodied in one tool what a lot of people are looking for. They just want to be fit and strong, energetic, healthy. They're not necessarily trying to be super strong or muscular. They just want to feel better and be healthy and energetic. So when I started using it, that just reinforced that philosophy quite a bit. And then after I got certified, I went through Pavel Sotsalin certification in 2002. And then a few months later, I got laid off from a job I hated. It wasn't the worst thing that could have happened because I was stuck in a comfort zone where I hated the job. But I was probably not going to quit because I was making good money. And I think a lot of people are in that situation. They don't like what they do, but they make good money doing it. And it's hard to give that up and start from zero doing something you want to do when you're an adult and have to pay bills and so forth. But fortunately, I got laid off from that, and then I just jumped right into this whole fitness thing. And the first couple of years were pretty tough, but it was something I really wanted to do. So even during those difficult periods, I was still very excited about it because there was that strong sense of possibility. You were actually doing something you were excited to do for once. It was fulfilling. So it was one of those things where that was intrinsically motivating to finally do something I wanted to do.
All right, that's awesome. Now, we both have been following you for a while, and one of the number one things when you mention Mike Mahler, they go, that jacked vegan guy? And, we're very curious, you know, what led you to become a vegan, and what have you found the differences in your athletic performance from switching to that kind of lifestyle?
Sure. Yeah, the vegan thing is actually it's been an additional marketing tool, actually, inadvertently. I didn't get into it for that reason, but people either fall into two camps. They'll go, man, I can't believe that guy's so big and strong on a vegan diet. So then they start thinking, well, shit, if you can get that strong on it, imagine what I can do with his line of thinking. Because these are people that are detractors. They don't think you can get big and strong on a vegan diet. But if they see me doing it, they think, well, I'll get even stronger following his training and fitness advice. And then you have the people that are just super motivated by that because maybe they wanted to get into a vegan diet or they wanted to try it out for whatever reasons, whether it's humane reasons or health reasons, whatever reasons they want to get into, and it's motivating on that front. But either way, it's controversial, so people talk about it. So you either have people going, oh, that guy's an idiot, I don't know why he does that, or you have people going, wow, that's really motivating. Either way, it works in your favor, though, because you want people talking about whatever you're doing.
Absolutely.
What you don't want to do in life is play the safe lane where you're a politician that doesn't want to rock any boat, rather. So you're when you're controversial, and I'm controversial without intentionally being controversial, it's just my personality. I take strong stances on things. That's going to galvanize some people, and it's going to get other people irritated, but it's going to get people talking either way. And if you talk to anyone who's into search engine optimization, they'll tell you that it doesn't matter if it's negative talk or positive talk. It's all additive in terms of improving your search engine optimization. But anyway, back to your question. With the vegan diet, honestly, when I first got into it, I was 20. I'm 40 now. When I first got into it, it took a while to really dial it in, because back then there really wasn't any information on in terms of how to use it for athletes. It was more, it's inhumane to eat meat, and then here's why you should be vegan. It was more of that kind of line of thinking, rather than, you know, here's how to feel great doing it, here's how to be healthy doing it.
At that time,
you didn't really find anyone that was really strong and athletic that was following a vegan diet. So I had no blueprint whatsoever to follow. And it took a while to really figure out how to dial it in. It took a couple years, honestly, until I really felt like I had it nailed in.
Now, what are some staples of your diet? Because, I mean, like I said, you're jacked. No other word to describe that. What are some staples that really have benefited you physically?
I think legumes, nuts, and seeds are kind of my staples, because if you combine legumes, nuts, and seeds, you have a complete protein, which has a nice balance of protein, fat, and low glycemic carbohydrates. So I just happen to do really well on those. Some people don't do well on nuts, seeds, legumes. They find it problematic. But me, I feel great. I digest it very well. It fills me up. And I find that if I have a really good dinner loaded with vegetables, legumes, nuts, and seeds, that's going to carry over to the workout I do the next day very nicely, because it's the meal you eat the night before the workout the next day that matters more than what you're eating that day, especially if you're training in the morning.
Now, Mike, we opened up our Facebook page to a few questions, and we actually had one of our friends, Joe Viz. He had a few questions on actually expounding on what you just said about some vegan foods containing
phytoestrogen
and high estrogen counts, and how it could be counterproductive for some males that are working out at an elite level.
Okay, you have to differentiate phytoestrogens from actual chemical estrogens in the body. So just because phytoestrogens have a similar chemical makeup, it doesn't mean they're going to act like stronger estrogens in the body, such as estradiol, estrone, estriol. So that's one thing. If phytoestrogens have maybe 1/1000th the power of a real estrogen. So, I mean, if you want to worry about estrogen, then stop drinking beer, because beer is loaded with hops, and hops is highly estrogenic. So drinking a beer, you might as well take a birth control pill. So I always laugh when people go, Oh man, you know, soy is so full of estrogen, and they're chugging away beers. you want to wonder why guys get so emotional, start wanting to hug everybody when they have beers, or they want to fight everybody?
So yeah,
the estrogen dominance, all right? It's not because their testosterone's going up from taking it. So the phytoestrogens are not things I would worry about in there. What you would want to worry about is whether you have a food sensitivity, and that's whether it's a vegetarian food or an animal protein. If you have a food sensitivity, that can cause an inflammatory reaction, which will weaken your immune system, and that process can also convert testosterone into estrogen, because when inflammation goes way up, it causes cortisol to go up, because cortisol is anti-inflammatory. So it's a roundabout way of a difficult problem. So that would be something I'm more concerned about. But the phytoestrogens in most foods I'm not worried about. Even in soy, which has, you know, more phytoestrogens than other legumes, even there it's really only problematic with people who have food sensitivities to soy, because the phytoestrogen soy work on a estrogen receptor, which is called a type 2 estrogen receptor, type B estrogen receptor. So it's not as potent as something that picks up on the other type of estrogen receptor. Also, there was a doctor, Dr. Shippen, who used soy on people on TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, because he found that the weaker phytoestrogens would lock into the estrogen receptor and thus prevent stronger estrogen uptake. So in some ways, it can actually lower estrogen.
Oh, wow.
I've done experiments on myself in the past where I think I ate like a block of tofu every day for several months, and I had my estradiol levels checked, and they were actually lower than they were before I did that. So I'm not saying that's going to happen to everyone, because everybody metabolizes foods differently. I just think that the soy topic is a controversial one that no one will let go, even though proof is to the contrary. In fact, there was even a study with a bunch of men where they had them eat soy every day for a few months. It's on PubMed, you know, so this is a legitimate study. It's not just something that someone tried with a few friends, and it's a legitimate medical study. And then there wasn't any increase in soy. I mean, any increase in estrogen, rather.
Now, did you dabble in any other diets or any other lifestyle changes before you went into being a vegan, or did you kind of transition into something like being a more pescatarian or a fruitarian before you transferred over?
Yeah, I started on my path to becoming a full vegetarian when I was 15. So at that time, I was doing a pesco-vegetarian diet. So I still ate fish, eggs, and dairy. And that was just a transitional – that was just a way to transition to it, because I had eaten quite a bit of meat my whole life before that. And then I cut out the fish when I was 18, still ate eggs and dairy. Then I learned about factory farms, and that's where most of our eggs and dairy comes from. So I'm like, wow, now I got to cut this stuff out. I just got used to this. So that was, as I talked about earlier, was the more difficult period. And I kind of went back and forth quite a bit, where I would try full-blown vegan, didn't feel great, would add eggs and dairy back in, then give it another shot. And it wasn't until I learned how to combine a lot of different foods, as well as focus on real foods, because one of the biggest mistakes a lot of vegans make is they try to replicate a meat-based diet via a vegan diet. And what I mean by that is they overly focus on meat analogs, these fake meat products such as seitan and soy protein isolate. And these are problematic foods because they're overly processed, full of basically garbage that our body doesn't recognize as real food. So they're difficult to digest and metabolize and get real energy from. So you're not going to feel good on that form of a vegan diet. And that's why a lot of people give up. They try that, they feel terrible, they never try it again. But if you focus on real power foods, low glycemic fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, legumes, making sure you have a good amount of fat in your diet, I do very well on more fat in my diet than a lot of people. I mean, I can take my fat up to dietary fat up to 50% and feel fantastic. You know, other people, I do poorly on carbohydrates, like a lot of people, where if I eat too many carbohydrates, I'll store body fat very quickly in a short period of time. So that's just me. Again, I don't say that what works for me is going to work for everyone universally, but I definitely metabolize fats way better. My skin looks better. Hormones are better. Workouts are better. The great thing about working out hard is you know whether something works or not. So if you're getting weaker every week, whatever your diet is, whether it's a paleo diet or a vegan diet or a South Beach diet, Atkins diet, it doesn't matter what diet it is. If you're getting weaker every week, it's not working. But if your performance is getting better over time, then whatever you're doing is working. Could it be made better? Sure. But it's definitely working.
Now, here's another thing, because you know there's going to be someone listening to this right now going, bro, where's your protein? Where's your protein, bro? So you got to put that out there.
Well, that's easy. Human meat. I like to eat people. That's the best amino acid profile. I mean, come on now. If we're going to eat flesh, let's go for the real deal here.
Yeah, why not, right?
Amino acid profile.
Well, you know.
Again, legumes, nuts, and seeds, that equals a pretty good amount of protein. But here's the thing about protein. I don't buy into the whole excessive protein intake that a lot of the magazines like to convey, such as 1 or 2 grams of protein per pound. I think that's excessive. And even talking to guys who are not vegetarian, like Franco Colombo, the legendary famous bodybuilder, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's best friend, I used to get chiropractic adjustments with him when I was in Los Angeles. And we talked about protein and training and so forth. And even he said that when he and Arnold were training really hard, they would use 1 gram per kilo, and then they would add about 30 or 40 grams on top of that. So 1 gram per kilo for these guys would be, you know, maybe 90 grams of protein, and then they add an extra 40. So we're talking about 130, maybe up to 150, which is nothing compared to the recommendations you hear now. And these guys were, you know, Schwarzenegger was around 225, 230 pounds.
No problem. Technical difficulties.
Hold on one second.
No problem.
The dogs didn't get their protein recommendation.
You guys, man. So when you look at 1 gram per kilo, that's what all the scientific journals have shown is adequate. Hold on one second.
No problem. What did that?
Hey,
no, we won't.
Stop that. Rabia, get down here. Rabia, get down here. 1 second, Gus.
No problem. Mike Mahler's dogs are eating a person.
That's awesome. You were talking about the more high-performance athletes such as bodybuilders. How about for mixed martial arts guys, Muay Thai fighters, jiu-jitsu dudes? What do you think are some of the best supplements and if not supplements, food for some of these high-performance guys competing on a professional level?
Yeah, it's going to vary with each person. I mean, we've seen people like Nick Diaz and Mac Danzig and quite a few different combat athletes do well on a vegan diet. But just generally speaking, you know, you need protein, you need fat, you need carbohydrates. When you're a hardworking athlete and you're training several times a day, the last thing you want to do is a low-carbohydrate diet. You're going to feel terrible real fast. You need the glucose for your brain. You need the glucose to refuel. So you want to think balance. Let me get a balance of protein, fat, carbohydrates at each meal. And then you may want to increase the carbs or fat based on how you metabolize food and also what your activity levels are, your recovery, et cetera. In terms of supplements, you always want to look at mineral analysis first. So zinc and magnesium tend to be depleted quite a bit in anyone, regardless of their activity, who trains very difficult, whether it's a marathon runner, bodybuilder, MMA athlete, Muay Thai person, et cetera. So doing something like SpectraCell, which is a blood test that analyzes your vitamins, minerals, amino acids, et cetera, that's not a bad way to go to determine exactly where you're at. And then you can personalize supplementation based on your results rather than just wondering if you need something or not. You know, most people who take supplements, they're just taking stuff that they read about or someone recommended it to them. You don't really know for sure whether it's actually something that you need. For all you know, you could be creating a further imbalance. You could be loading up on zinc when you already have good levels, and now you're depleting your copper, for example. So it's always a good idea to use science as much as possible. You don't have to blow thousands of dollars on testing. You know, you just get this test done one time and get an idea where you're at.
What does something like that cost? How much does something like the SpectraCell cost? Is it fairly inexpensive? Is it something you can buy at your local CVS or drugstore?
No, you'd have to get it online, and it's a test they send to you. It's a blood spot test where you would just prick your finger, and then you send it into a lab, and you get the results. I believe it's around $150. I forget now. But some medical insurance will cover it. It depends on what insurance you have, what your doctor is like, if they approve it or not. But it's going to be around $150, I believe.
Okay. Now, you know, Mike, you really got a great You really have a good name for hormone optimization right now. And, you know, I want to go back to hormone optimization. You know, now everybody's getting on TRT or some kind of hormone testosterone replacement. What I really want to ask you about is, what are your opinions about where the levels of most people's testosterone should be? And, you know, what affects the level? What ideally would cause somebody to be concerned about their testosterone level?
Yeah, I mean, the ideal level is going to be correlated with your sex drive. So if your sex drive is high, then it doesn't really matter what the number is on a piece of paper. That number is good for you. And if you want to be even more specific for men, basically, if you wake up and the flag is raised up the pole each day, well, that's a good sign that you're producing testosterone while you're sleeping. And you can even start keeping a journal. You know, just take a photo each morning and post it on Facebook. But basically, I mean, that's like I was talking to a few people the other day about it. I go, especially with men, it's very easy to determine whether someone's hormonal profile is good from a simplistic standpoint, in the sense that if you have a high sex drive, then most likely your internal environment is pretty good. And I mean it genuinely high, not one where you're faking it because you want to look good in front of your friends or like, oh, I'm so virile, this, that, and so forth. And if your arterial health is good as well, so meaning that you get a pump easily when you work out and, you know, blood flow is good, that's a sign that your endocrinology is pretty good too. Now, it can definitely be a lot more complicated than that, but if someone's sex drive is poor, we know that they're not hormonally optimal. And then we can look at where you store body fat. If you store a lot of lower body fat, that means you're converting testosterone into estrogen rapidly. And this is something I see a lot more of, which is really frightening, actually, where you can just look at a guy fully clothed and walking around and go, man, that guy is estrogen dominant. I don't even have to see his lab work because he's holding fat the way an overweight woman would. Mm. He's holding a lot of fat in the legs, the glutes, abs, etc. That's a high conversion of testosterone being converted into estrogen. So again, the number, I mean, most doctors will say between 500 and 800 total testosterone is optimal, but there are guys who are lower than that who feel great. There are guys who are at 700 and don't feel great. They need to be higher than that to feel great. So every guy has a number. But what's interesting is I've seen a lot of people who get overly fixated on the lab work. Where I had a guy recently who took my testosterone booster, and his number went from, I think it was 400 to 787, and he was disappointed that I wasn't higher than that.
Oh,
he goes, you know, I feel fantastic. I feel great. I'm crushing it in my workouts, but I was hoping that my number would have gone even higher than that. I was like, look, man, I mean, the whole point of having optimal testosterone is so that you feel the way you're feeling right now. So the number is irrelevant. And 787 is a great number anyway. So it's not, but you know, this is the guy's mentality though, is that he probably has a friend who has a higher number than that.
Yeah.
It's probably a competition. You know?
It's like they're comparing arm sizes.
It's the new, as more people start doing testing, it's going to be like the new question people start asking each other. It's like, oh, what's your T level? Oh, really? Well, let's do your left part.
Yeah.
It's going to be like people talking about their incomes. It's
yeah.
It's dumb.
Mine's bigger than yours.
Sometimes people feel great, and then they get their lab work, and the numbers are not what they thought they would be based on how they feel, and now all of a sudden their day is ruined. I go, well, look, man, you felt great right before you saw those numbers. And then there's people who feel terrible, and they look at lab work where – superficially, it looks pretty good. And when you look in deeper at all the different metabolites of what's going on, then you realize the big picture. So it's a little bit more complex than just looking at one or two things.
Okay. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, what brought me to start taking your test booster, which I'm already loving. I got to plug that. I love your test booster.
Thank you.
And I love the recovery oil. That's been mainstay in my life.
We're basically – We're Mike Mueller fangirls right now, but we're basically.
I need more fangirls. I got too many guys that are fans of me. I need more attractive women that are giving me this kind of praise.
Well, you came to the wrong place.
we're gonna work on that for you.
Yeah, we'll try to help you out with that.
We know you live out in Vegas, so maybe that'd be like a good draw. Maybe invite a few people out there.
There you go. So what I wanted to ask you though, just going back to my situation, I got my testosterone checked. It's progressively throughout the years gotten lower. I'm 28 now. I started fighting at 16. And being that I had so many years of competition fighting, I've always been competing in Muay Thai for, like I said, 12 years. Could that factor of having so many fight or flight moments be the reason why I had such a lower level?
That's definitely going to be part of it, and if you've taken a lot of hits to the head, that'll be another factor as well, because what happens with a lot of athletes, combat athletes especially, is that anytime you have head trauma, the pituitary gland, which is basically your master center, it's the part of the brain that controls all of your hormone production, if that gets damaged, that can shut off your natural testosterone, your growth hormone production, you name it. And when that happens, you really don't have a choice but hormone replacement, because once the pineal gland has been damaged, there really isn't a natural way to rejuvenate that. So I'm not saying that's what's going on in your particular case. That's just why we see more and more combat athletes gravitating towards HRT. And also, ironically, a lot of the other reason why a lot of combat athletes have gravitated towards HRT is the fact that they abused it at some point in their life and shut down their natural production. And now they have to take it to maintain an optimal, normal level. But back to your question, yes, stress is definitely huge, especially any kind of stress. So, I mean, it's financial stress, emotional stress, physical stress. It doesn't really matter what it is. When cortisol goes way up, your testosterone tends to go way down, because what's going on is you're no longer in that thriving state. So this is why I talk about how sex drive is such an important correlator to your optimal testosterone, because when you're in a state of thriving, your sex drive is naturally going to be high. You're healthy, nature's way of saying get out there, contribute to the gene pool, you're going to make it better. Now, when your sex drive is really low, it's usually a sign of an internal environment that's unhealthy, and it's nature's way of basically saying don't contribute to the gene pool because you're going to make it worse. You're not healthy right now. So stress is a huge factor in that, and the better you manage stress, the better your mental health, your physical health will be, and that's why things like meditation, recovery massages, optimal sleep. You know, sleep is critical. If you don't get enough sleep, you have no growth hormone production. You ruin insulin sensitivity, which is a master control hormone. You ruin leptin sensitivity, another master control hormone. And you don't give yourself that natural reset. It's like imagining having your car running all day and then instead of turning it off at night when you go into the home, your house, you just leave it on all night. It's going to overheat. It's going to burn out at some point. So your body's the same way.
Okay. So, you know, I gotta definitely ask you, 350, should I be worried or not?
I mean, 350 is pretty low for a guy your age. I mean, my dad's in his 70s and he's at 550. Now here brings up my next point though. He handles stress very well. I mean, he's been all over the world. He's been to third world countries. Been in some pretty hairy situations. You know, working for the UN. He handles stress very well. He's very calm, cool, collective. Is it from eating a healthy life? I mean, is it eating from a healthy diet? No. Is it from working out hard his whole life? No. Doesn't do any of those things. But he handles stress extremely well, and as a result, you know, he has a T level higher than most guys half his age. So it just goes to show. It just reinforces my whole point about the importance of managing stress a lot better. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't fight or you shouldn't be a driven person or challenge yourself, but you have to balance that. Those are adrenaline-based activities, right? Like a hard workout's an adrenaline-based activity. It creates more stress, which is fine, because if you don't harness that, you're not going to live fully, and you're going to have a lot of anxiety in your mind. So if you're not pushing yourself fully, you tend to have pent-up anxiety. But you have to realize that everything comes with a price. So if I drink caffeine in the morning, I'm going to have the illusion of more energy, but I'm going to be more tired later as a result of that. Now, if it's a competition or something where I have to perform at a high level, that's a price worth paying. But most people are making that trade-off each day, and that's what leads them to adrenal fatigue and just being wiped out all the time, because they're just building a huge deficit of energy depletion. So basically, you have to balance whatever activity you do. If I work out hard 3 times a week, then I need to do 3 restorative activities, whether it's Qigong, yoga, Tai Chi, joint mobility, getting my optimal sleep in, meditation's important, you know, whatever it is that you find relaxing.
How do you feel about people that are doing shift work and other jobs that don't require you to have a normal, you know, go to bed at 10, wake up at 6 kind of functionality? Like, can you still get optimal sleep and restoration if you're getting 2 hours here, 3 hours there, you know, working through the night, things like that? You know, a lot of law enforcement and soldiers and, you know, people aren't getting their solid 6-8 hours straight through, but they might break it up into parts over the day.
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is no. I mean, you totally destroy your circadian rhythm when you have such hours. And a lot of people have that out here in Vegas, right? They work all night at the casinos, bartenders, entertainers, you name it. And then they try to get their sleep in during the day. A good friend of mine had a lifestyle like that, and his estrogen was through the roof, like the highest I've ever measured, period. And he didn't look like a guy who had that much estrogen dominance, but it was because he wasn't getting that optimal sleep at night. Yeah, he's getting sleep during the day, but that's not working with your natural circadian rhythm. So that sleep is not going to be as deep as getting in sleep at night. You know, most people, ideally, you go to sleep at, let's say, 9 p.m. and then you wake up at 6 a.m. Now, do I do this? No, that would never work for me. I mean, 9 p.m., I can't – that just sounds really lame to me.
Yeah.
You go to sleep at 9 p.m., I mean – what hasn't even started yet here in this town?
Especially being in Vegas.
Going to sleep. I couldn't go to sleep at 9 p.m. if my life depended on it. And I couldn't wake up at 6 a.m. either. That reminds me of high school.
Yeah,
freezing my butt off. Miserable. For the bus to come at 6 a.m. No. So that's just depressing. You know, I go to sleep at 2, I wake up at 10. And what happens is your body is a highly adaptive mechanism. So the good news is you can adapt to a lot, and then you can diminish the negatives by just managing your health much better. So now, for example, the recovery oil you just mentioned, you know, I put that on before I go to sleep. I get really deep sleep, but I don't feel that 2 a.m. is that bad, because, you know, I'm waking up at 10 a.m. You know, that's a lot different than someone who's literally up all night into sunrise, and then it's perfectly bright outside, and that's when you're trying to get in your 8 hours. That's difficult. So what you have to do in that situation is you have to get blackout curtains, where you block out all of the light completely, to the point where you don't even know if it's light or dark outside. It has to be that dark. Because if there's even a little bit of light coming in, your cortisol is going to go up and you're going to be in this heightened state. So the sleep you have is going to be very light. And what you want is deep sleep, where you have vivid dreams, and the longer the better. So 8 hours of deep sleep where you're in that REM state, that's what you want. You know, crazy vivid dreams where you wake up and go, whoa, what happened? That's a sign that you're in that really deep sleep state. And it's hard to get into that for a long enough period when it's super bright outside, and that's where the problems come in. So you can adapt as much as you can, but you want to get away from that and get much closer to our circadian rhythm as much as possible. Honestly, with me, I would be better off let's say I went to sleep around like midnight or 1 a.m., woke up around 8 or 9. But you know, I like to play blackjack. You know?
Yeah, I hear it.
I don't sit around the house and watching TV till 2 a.m. I'm either working or I'm not having a good time. And what I do works for me. So I mean, each person has to find a way to make their lifestyle work for them. So you can. There's definitely things that can be done about it, but you're still paying a price. I think that the healthiest people are ones who can get to sleep earlier and wake up earlier, from what I've seen.
Okay, cool. Now I just want to shift gears back to kettlebells and get your opinion on something. What are the four essential lifts or motions you recommend for fighters, in specifically now that this organization's been taken off Glory Kickboxing?
Yeah, sure. But see, I mean, the kettlebell swing is the number one exercise with kettlebells. I mean, you can do swings with a dumbbell, but no exercise lends itself better to that movement than the kettlebell swing. It's just very fluid and comfortable. The bell feels like an extension of your arm, works the posterior chain. So all the muscles you're going to use when you're throwing a punch or throwing a kick. So it really teaches full body utilization of power as well, rather than isolating muscle groups. So what we find is people that are used to, let's say, bodybuilding style workouts, they have a very difficult time with something such as a kettlebell swing or a kettlebell snatch, kettlebell clean and jerk, because these are full body fluid motions where you're not isolating any muscle group. You're learning how to put your full body into the motion to lift the most amount of weight possible. And that's why Olympic lifters, for example, can lift a lot of weight, because they're not just picking up the weight with their grip or using their traps to get it to the rack position. It's a full body exercise where they're driving all of their body weight into the weight as an additional power force to get it to where it needs to go. So just like throwing a punch, you're putting all of your body weight into it, right? So for example, someone who can bench press 600 pounds, that doesn't mean they're going to be a good puncher. Mm. In fact, they're probably not going to be, because they're going to try to punch you the way they would bench press a barbell.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to generate much power that way.
T-Rex
While
arms.
Someone who knows how to get that torque, that rotation, and put it all together at just the right time, they have all of their body weight behind that punch, and so they're going to have a lot of power with that. And then in addition to their body weight, it's just the laws of physics with it. The more power and the faster you're making that transition, the more power you're generating, the more force is going into whatever you're trying to do. So kettlebell swing is number one. Number two would be kettlebell clean and push press or jerk. That's a great motion where you're learning how to transfer energy from the lower body to the upper body. Done in high repetitions or high volume with short breaks, you're really building your wind. What I don't think you should try to do is duplicate moves, fighting moves, with the training tool. So in other words, you're not going to do weighted punches or weighted kicks, are just trying to mimic an actual move you would do in a fight. What you want to do is develop the strength that will carry over to those things in an appropriate way, but you're not going to try to actually mimic an exact move you would do in the ring. So we see a lot of that in the so-called sports-specific world, and that's problematic.
Well,
let's get the body strong. Let's get the body fast. Let's get the body more powerful. The technique and all that's going to come from sport-specific drills, not from trying to use a weight training tool as a sport-specific tool.
Yeah, I always found that funny, because what's more sport-specific than actually training the technical aspect of your sport?
Right, exactly. And that's where the majority of your time should be spent. So any strength and conditioning program should be just giving you the basics to enhance whatever you're trying to do. I think some people make the mistake of putting too much time into their strength and conditioning, not enough time into their skill-focused areas. But then a lot of fighters make that mistake too, where what they're doing for strength and conditioning is a total waste of time. You know, they're doing hammer strength stuff and machines, and they're just doing way more than is necessary. Pick five moves that work the whole body. You can even get it down to two or three and dial in what's going to be most beneficial to what you need. Hey, guys. Yeah, Skype is notorious for dropping me at least once.
Ah, man. See, it's because you're a vegan.
Could be.
Yeah.
Those anti-vegans, if Twitter were doing this, we'd be all set.
I know, exactly. We were wondering one more question besides the kettlebell motions. Because you were mentioning the swing, the clean and jerk. Would you recommend doubles or singles, or how would you specifically?
I recommend doubles once you have the technique. So, I mean, it's a double swing is going to carry over to a double swing has everything a one-arm swing has and a lot more. But the problem is if you don't have the technique to do it, then it's just going to be a big mess. So yes, I definitely recommend double work when you're proficient at one-arm work. It's best to start off with one-arm work the first time you ever use a kettlebell and until you get proficient at one-arm. Once you make the transition to doubles, in my opinion, there's really no reason to go back to one-arm. I mean, you could say that in the context of improving punching power, really heavy one-arm jerk or push press would make more sense because you're learning how to put all your power into one side. So I could see some application there. But for the most part, if I'm really good at double kettlebell military press, for example, I'll be great at the one-arm press without ever doing it, but not the other way around.
Good point.
And the reason is let's say if I'm pressing 270-pound kettlebells, my entire body is working against 140 pounds. Now, if I press one 70-pound kettlebell, my body is working against a total of 70 pounds. So I have the structural integrity to work against 140 pounds. When I go back to just pressing 70 pounds, even though it's only with one arm, my body only has to support half the amount of weight. That weight's going to fly overhead. So I could work all day long, one-arm presses, each side's balanced, and then be like, okay, I'm ready for doubles. It's a totally different animal when you're holding two kettlebells in the rack position and trying to press them overhead. It's a totally different animal when you're double kettlebell snatching two heavy weights versus one, or double swings versus one. So if you get good at doubles, the one arm is going to be there, but not the other way around has been my experience.
Now, Mike, since you're living out in Vegas and it's kind of like a hotbed for mixed martial arts, are you currently working with are you doing any strength and conditioning programs with any camps, or are you working with any specific fighters on their strength and conditioning programs?
No, I'm not, honestly. I don't do much in the way of strength and conditioning at this point in my career. In fact, I'm not even teaching many kettlebell workshops anymore because I'm focused on the nutrition supplement side of my business now. That's my main focus right now. So my main focus is getting my products out there, building awareness about it, and then designing new products. I've got two more in the pipeline. And then really blowing up my podcast. I do a podcast with my buddy Sincere Hogan, the Live Life Aggressively podcast, and we do that twice a week. And that's really my focus right now. So I'm not doing any workshops. I don't have any private clients, and I don't do much in the way of designing strength and conditioning programs for people at this stage of my career. Even if I were doing all that, I wouldn't work with most fighters, because the reason is if they're famous, they want you to work with them for free.
Yeah.
And if they're not famous, they can't afford you. You know? So either way, it's. I mean, if it were earlier in my career, I wouldn't worry about that much. But at this stage of my career where I'm at now, I'm very well established and my time is valuable. If it's not fun for me to do, I'm not going to do it. So if I were going to work with a professional fighter, it would be someone who is just – it's just enjoyable for me to work with that man or woman where I'm just like, okay, this is fulfilling for me.
So you're saying you're not going to fly me out to Vegas and train me for free? Come on.
I'll fly you out to Vegas and light up some hookers for you.
Oh, yes.
Play some blackjack.
Why not? You're up anyway, too.
Win some blackjack.
There you go. Now – I wanted to basically go over some of your supplement line because, you know, both me and John, we tell everybody about your products. But now that we have you here, it'd be a great opportunity to educate everybody on your products. Going back to your zinc and magnesium oil, just if you could just give us a quick brief rundown of how you did some research on it, how you came up with the idea, and the benefits for the common person.
Sure. No, I have three supplements, right? I've got my Recoveril, I've got my testosterone booster, and I've got one called Restorzyme.
My favorite.
Restorzyme is just a systemic enzyme product, and it's just a private label of an existing product. So, I mean, I had a slight modification to it, but it's a great product that's already great, and there really wasn't a whole lot for me to do to make it better. But what I wanted to do was get my own label on it, get a big supply so I can help drive down the price so that you're getting a great product at the best price possible. So, I mean, it's possible I may add a couple things here and there to differentiate the product. Like mine has ginger in it. It's possible I may add a few more things. But for the most part, these guys have done their research, the guys who make this product. And there really isn't a whole lot for me to fiddle around with. Now, my testosterone booster, that's my formulation. You know, that's something I came up with. That's not something that was private label for me or something that someone else is selling. That's something where the exact ratio, which only I know because it's a proprietary blend where I don't want my competition to know the exact ratios because I've dialed it in perfectly, and that's why people are getting such great results. You know, that's why I've had people go from a total testosterone of 292 to 890 in a month, and I've had people go from 400 to 800 because it's dialed in perfectly.
So are the rumors true that your testosterone booster is actually just extracts of your blood?
Yeah.
Or tears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just, one just of the pick two. Some grass in my backyard and bottle it.
Yeah, exactly. I knew
so
it.
So we got that one going.
Because, I mean, I've been taking it for 2-3 weeks, and I've already noticed the difference.
Yeah, your T levels are probably a lot higher now. What's cool is even when you go off of it, you're still going to have a higher baseline has been what I've been finding. Like, I had a guy who he started at 300 actually before he got on, and then he measured 4 weeks after he got off, and he was at 550.
Wow.
So he was probably around 800 at the end of that four-week cycle, or I think it was an eight-week cycle. So he was probably in the 800s at the end of that eight-week cycle or probably halfway through it even. But even 4 weeks after getting off it, completely off of it, he still had a higher baseline than what he had before. So the great thing about my testosterone booster is that it's enhancing your natural testosterone production. So you don't have to do any post-cycle therapy the way you would with pro-hormones or hormone replacements or analogs of testosterone or any of that stuff. It's helping your brain communicate with your testes to produce more testosterone, to help convert cholesterol into testosterone. Cholesterol is the building block of all sex hormones. It's working with dopamine in your mind, so you're more motivated, your brain's healthier, it's helping free up testosterone a lot more. So I think it's enhancing a lot of pathways where even when you go off of it, yeah, your number is going to go down from what it was while you were on, but it's not going to go all the way back down to where you started is what we're seeing. So it's pretty interesting. We'll have to look at more lab work as we go along here, but that was my theory of what would happen anyway, and now it's being substantiated, so that's pretty cool. So it's basically three ingredients. One is called bulbine natalensis. That's B-U-L-B-I-N-E, bulbine natalensis, which is a South African herb. It's only grown during a few seasons out there, so it's not something that's grown all year round. It's not something that's made in massive quantities, which is probably why most nutrition supplement companies are not selling it, because they're not going to be able to make enough raw material to equal their demand. So it's actually a perfect herb for someone like me, a small businessman, where I've got a decent demand, but I'm not putting GNC or Vitamin Shop out of business.
Yeah.
But what's going on is that it's definitely enough to equal the demand I have so that I can offer a great product to the customer at a good price, and I'm making good money out of it. So it's win-win all around. And then when you buy a product from me, you're going to get access to me. So I'll send you a personal email saying, hey, look, this is the best way to use it. If you have any questions, hit me up. You know, you're not going to get that from any other supplement company. You're not going to get the guy who formulated the product that you're taking that's accessible to you to make sure you get the best results out of it. So I want to keep this thing relatively small where I always have that high level of customer service.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice personal touch when I order some of your products, and when the products come in the mail, you do have a nice almost personalized letter from you saying exactly what you just said. That's a really nice touch. That's a very non-GNC, you know, non-big pharma, big supplement company.
You got that kind of letter? I got one saying that, you know, if I ever order anything again, he was going to strangle me.
Hey, man, what can I say?
No, thank you. To be fair, I'm able to do that because I'm keeping the operation relatively small. I'm not trying to blow it up where my product is going to be in every store. I'm not even looking for distributors. I like the model of sell direct to customer. And because I have a good following and I have good website optimization, and I'm doing strategic means to get people aware of the product, I don't really see a need to go to any distributors. If people come to me, I'm amenable to that, but I'm not actively pursuing it. And also with this product, the way Bulbine works is that's the one that converts the cholesterol into testosterone. It helps the brain communicate with the testes more effectively. It increases luteinizing hormone, which are signaling hormones that the brain uses to send to the testes to produce more testosterone. And then the second herb in there is an Ayurvedic herb. It's an Indian herb called Makuna. And Makuna is awesome for improving your mood. It increases a neurotransmitter called dopamine, which is your motivational neurotransmitter. So that's why often people notice it on the first dose. They feel, a little bit more perked up. And within a week, they usually feel the Makuna benefits right away. And then Makuna also acts as supports growth hormone, and it also supports that luteinizing hormone. It also helps with brain health, and everything starts with the brain. So if your brain is not healthy, then the rest of the body is going to follow suit. And then the final ingredient is nettle root, stinging nettle root, which helps unbind testosterone from sex hormone binding globulins, so it's more bioavailable, more free. It also has benefits for liver health, kidney health. So it's an all-around prostate health as well. So it's an all-around good herb to have in – a product designed for male health.
Now, what's your opinion on all these things that other people are putting out? Deer antler, tribulus, you know, these other concepts.
Well, tribulus has never been proven to be effective ever. It's one of those things where I always laugh when people still try to sell it because it's been around since, let's say, the 1990s, and everyone got really excited when it first came out. I remember when tribulus, there was one company that first started putting tribulus out, and it was this amazing Bulgarian herb that's increasing testosterone by 45%, and everybody couldn't wait to get on it. And then we all tried it, and none of us noticed jack off of it. And the people are still selling it now, you know, 15 years later. I'm just like, wow, man, it didn't work then, and there's still people that ask about it and try it now because it's marketed so well. Some people will get an increase in sex drive, and no one really knows why that's happening. Maybe it's a placebo effect. Maybe it's some other pathway. Maybe it's increasing something in the brain that's just increasing libido. Who knows? But it doesn't increase testosterone. It's never been shown to increase testosterone. It's never. It's been shown to not increase testosterone many times in studies, but it's never been shown to increase it. So whenever you see tribulus in a product, you know right away it's not a good product because it's someone that just threw it in there. Because they didn't research things properly. And most testosterone boosters, there are some good ones out there like Activate Extreme by Driven Sports. That's a great product. And that company also has a estrogen blocker called Triazole, another great product. So there's some pretty good testosterone boosters out there. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, to my own. I think what I've created is the best, of course. But I mean, but there are other good products out there. It's not like mine is the only one. But most of the ones, anyone that has tribulus in it, you already know that's garbage. Tomcat at least, same thing. Doesn't do jack. Now, so, I mean, these are the kind of herbs that were excited. Everyone was excited about 10 years ago. And believe me, when something works, everybody knows about it. It's kind of like creatine monohydrate. When I first started taking that in 1994, got great results off of it. So did everyone else for the most part. Like maybe 3% of people who take it don't notice anything. And that spread like wildfire. You know, I mean, Everybody found out about it. So when something works, word of mouth gets out there. This is before the internet and everything. But everybody was taking creatine back then and to a large extent still do now because it works well and it's inexpensive. So, I mean, most of the herbs that people are talking about don't do jack. Now, the deer antler can work to increase IGF-1. So people take deer antler velvet and their IGF-1 goes up. And IGF-1 is the most active metabolite of growth hormone. So it's usually what doctors will measure for in the blood because growth hormone is very unstable. So it's constantly changing. So measuring growth hormone itself wouldn't be very accurate in terms of what your actual growth hormone levels are. But the IGF-1, which is the most active metabolite, generally if that number is really good, then your growth hormone numbers are healthy. So that's what people look at. And quite a few people have taken deer antler velvet and their IGF-1 levels have gone up quite a bit. So there may be some validity there. But the thing is that allegedly with deer antler velvet, it has high concentrations of IGF-1 in it. Now, if that's true, then you have the same problems of taking any hormone where it will actually have negative effects on your natural production over time. Now, my theory is that it probably whatever IGF-1 it has in it is probably not enough that would be a problem. And also, even if it does have high levels of it in it, it doesn't metabolize well when digested. You know, that's why people have to inject growth hormone. If it's something that you could just take orally, people would have it in pills. But it's a very sophisticated hormone, and it's not something you can just consume orally and expect to get any real benefits out of it. So the deer antler velvet, that one is still a little bit of a question mark. You know, some people have taken it, have gotten great results off of it. Other people have taken it, haven't noticed jack. But so there may be some benefits there. I think there's better things to take, though, like the Makuna that's in my product. That also supports growth. Skype, man. Skype. This is worse than normal. Usually I get cut off once every hour, not twice every 10 minutes.
It's the NSA. They're truncating our bandwidth.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, from what you're saying, the best take home we can say is that don't take your supplement, take Tribulus.
Yeah. What, was I cut off that far ago? I mean, yeah. I thought about deer antler velvet for probably 10 minutes and wasn't even being recorded.
No, yeah. We got it.
Okay, good.
So you said you had the three supplements. You have the zinc mag oil, you have the test booster, and you have the restore enzyme. Now you said you had a few things in the pipeline. Is there anything that you're coming up with that you can talk about, or is it top secret?
I have an estrogen blocker coming out soon, which is badass. It's got three great ingredients that I won't get into just yet because I want to wait until the product is out. But It has three ingredients that work extremely well to block conversion of testosterone into estrogen, just lower estrogen at the receptor uptake level. And one of the herbs also increases DHT, which is a powerful metabolite of testosterone. So it's not going to take DHT through the roof where people have to worry about hair loss and stuff like that. People often hear DHT, it's called dehydrotestosterone, which is estimated to be three to ten times more powerful than testosterone in terms of increasing your sex drive and your virility and so forth. So, I mean, testosterone is really a pro-hormone for DHT. And unlike testosterone, DHT can never be converted into estrogen, and it actually helps block conversion. It actually helps lower estrogen levels, rather. So that's a really interesting herb it's called Caralluma that's in my product. This will be actually the first nutrition supplement that's ever had this in there. Now, some people are going to Google Caralluma and say, oh, this is in other products, and that's a different extract than what's in mine. So I'm not going to say the last part of it because, again, I want to keep this to myself until the product is out there. But the one that's in my product does have the estrogen-lowering effects, the DHT modulation, as well as benefits on cholesterol levels, blood glucose levels, and joint health. So those are going to be the additional side effect benefits of this product is not only will it help put your estrogen in the right range, which means not too high or too low. You don't want to lower estrogen to go too low because if you do that, you start getting joint pain, low sex drive, and poor mood. But a lot of people don't realize that it's the ratio between testosterone and estrogen that's important. And if you take testosterone up too high and estrogen too low, you're going to feel terrible. You can actually have a very low sex drive and low sex function when estrogen is too low. So what we want to do is lower excessive levels of it and improve that ratio. Now, a lot of people won't even need to take this who are on my testosterone booster because that has estrogen control as well. So it's really going to be more for people that have just excessive conversion of testosterone to estrogen. But it's also something you can take during off cycles of my testosterone booster because my estrogen blocker also acts as a testosterone enhancer as well. So you could take it with my testosterone booster as an additive effect. And I've been doing that recently myself, and it works great taken together. Or you could just cycle between the two. And women can take it as well. Women don't take my testosterone booster. It's not that they can't. You know, it's not that it's unsafe for women. It's just it's not going to increase testosterone in women, and it's not going to have the same benefits that guys are getting out of it. So it doesn't really make sense for women to use it. But the estrogen blocker will be good for both men and women because estrogen dominance is a big problem systemically in our society right now. You know, too much estrogen fuels cancers and other health issues.
Okay, and is that your next big project, or are there any other?
No, that's the next big one for sure. That one will be out probably in May or June. I'm working on a pre-workout supplement with my good friend Mark Philippi. He's a strength coach based out here.
Oh, nice.
Mark used to have a pre-workout supplement called Power Shot, which was awesome stuff. No caffeine, no stimulants in it. Everybody loved it. And then he had a problem with his manufacturer, and it just kind of fell off the wayside. So I met up with him recently and said, look, let's design something together because I think we can make a product that's way better than Power Shot. Doesn't have as many ingredients. Just focus on the few things that have the most bang for your buck, and let's formulate something else here. So we're actually working on the formula for that right now, just going back and forth on what we think will be optimal. And then we'll do some testing, see what people think of it. And if everything works out well, we'll go to production on that. So that'll probably happen before the end of the year. But you know what? You never know with supplements. You know, my testosterone booster took 3 years before I finally got it out there. And a good part of that was because I didn't really understand how this whole game worked in terms of manufacturing. So there were a lot of delays with just being new to the whole game. You know, now that I know how this whole process works, I can make future products move a lot faster. But everything always takes longer than you think it will, has been my experience in life. So you better enjoy the process and be in it for the long haul, because otherwise you're going to give up quickly.
Absolutely. And just before we call it quits, because I got to say, we did take up a lot of your time. We're so thankful that you made time for us. Any plugs or shout outs you want to give out?
Yeah, it'd be great to just plug my podcast with my buddy Sincere Hogan. It's just called the Live Life Aggressively Podcast. All of the episodes are archived on my website, MikeMahler.com, or my friend Sincere's website, NewWarriorTraining.com. And it's also on iTunes, Stitcher, most of the places where you find podcasts. And the show basically is about taking charge of your life. It's more of a lifestyle optimization than, let's say, just health and fitness. Although we do talk about that a lot. We've had high-profile strength coaches on the show, such as Charles Poliquin, Dan John. We have Ian King coming up soon. We've had best-selling authors like Robert Greene, author of The 50th Law, 48 Laws of Power.
He's excellent. I heard him on the Rogan podcast. He was awesome.
We've had Daniel Cole, author of The Talent Code, on the show. We had Nadine Pisani, author of Happier Than a Billionaire, how she and her husband just gave up the 9-to-5 lifestyle and moved to Costa Rica. So it's a very broad show. We had our friend James Pond came on talking about how he's working hard to help victims of human trafficking. Melia Kaplan came on talking about how she's helping abandoned animals in Los Angeles. So we definitely haven't pigeonholed ourselves where all we can talk about is strength training, nutrition, fitness. Those things are obviously important to us, but we don't want that to be every single episode. We want to provoke some thought. So, I mean, if I could sum up the show in just a few words, it's about provoking thought. It's about getting people to think about things that they may not have ever considered and just starting an interesting conversation. We're not trying to get everyone to agree with everything we have to say, but just getting people to think about things that they may not have ever registered in their mindset. And then also we're having a big workshop coming up. While I'm not doing a lot of courses, what I'm focused on is promoting much bigger events. So in Las Vegas in September 2021, we're going to have me, Sincere Hogan, Kim Blackburn, Steve Cotter, all in one event. It's going to be a two-day course, 8 hours each day. And we're going to make this a real experience. So it's not going to just be you come out and get some instruction and then you go back to your hotel room at the end of the night. We're going to make this an experience where we have nightlife activities, where we have social activities, where you get a lot of interaction with the instructors and with each other. Because the great thing about these events is you meet a lot of really interesting people. You meet a lot of cool people, a lot of people live in parts of the country where you may not know people that are positive-minded and focused like you are. So you're kind of alone out there. And then when you come to an event like this, you meet similar-minded people and develop some lifelong friendships. Who knows? You may even get laid if you're lucky.
Oh, thank God. That's what I'm looking for.
Where do I sign up and how much is it?
I am taking your test booster.
Who knows, man? It could be one of the best weekends of your life.
Two for one.
Make this a real Vegas experience. You know, we don't want this to be everyone comes out to the course and then they're going back to the Comfort Inn at night and watching TV till the next day. We want to make this a fun weekend where people are going, man, that was a blast. I learned a lot of stuff. That was a fun time. All the extracurricular activities were badass. We want it to be a real fun experience so that this becomes a yearly event.
Now, will your estrogen blocker help me if I down a bunch of beers at your event?
It could. That could be one of the best-selling points. Is, hey, don't stop drinking. Just take this with it.
There you go.
Perfect. Sign me up.
So, Mike, again, thank you so much.
Just switch to weed, buddy. You
know, there we go. Hey, Mike Mahler says weed. Let's do it.
Healthy with the relaxation after those hard workouts. You know, just give up the alcohol and switch to something that's more progressive in terms of your recreational activities.
I know. Well, you sold me. I think I'm going to take that and your test booster. So, again, Mike, we got to thank you for coming down and doing this with us. We really appreciate your time and all your knowledge.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the support.
Of course.
Looking forward to getting this episode out there. I'll make sure to blast it to all my sources.